The headlines this hour: Moscow and Kiev keep pounding targets in eastern Ukraine despite Russian leaders ordering a ceasefire for the Orthodox Christmas. Railway strike in the UK enters its last day as the government mulls action to make it harder for key workers to walk out. And Yemenis fill the streets for the second day, demanding an end to the years-long Saudi siege of their country. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Russia says its troops are still observing the 36-hour ceasefire despite artillery attacks by Ukraine's army.
The united group of Russian troops has been honoring the ceasefire along the entire line of contact in the area of the special military operation since 9 o'clock GMT on January the 6th. Meanwhile, the Kiev regime has continued to shell civilian areas and Russian positions with artillery over the past 24 hours.
The defense ministry spokesman added that Russian troops have returned fire from Ukrainian forces in self-defense. Ukrainian officials claim that Russian forces keep carrying out strikes against some cities in the country. The brief ceasefire that began on Friday ends at Saturday midnight. The truce was called by President Putin, which is aimed at halting fighting during the Orthodox Christmas, which both countries observe. Ukraine's President Zelensky has rejected the truce as a ploy by Russia to bolster its army defenses. Moscow has repeatedly said it is open to negotiations to end the conflict, while Ukraine says that Russia must withdraw its forces first. A strike by UK railway workers has entered its fifth and final day, with thousands of signalers and train crew walking out. Only about one in five trains across the country is running on Saturday. Passengers have already been advised to avoid taking trains. Union leaders are due to meet the rail minister on Monday to resolve a dispute over pay. The workers want better pay and working conditions at the time when inflation has soared to record levels in the UK. The action is the latest in strikes in the past months over the same issue, involving different sectors, from nurses to teachers. The government is now planning to introduce a new law that would make it harder for key workers to strike. Legislation forces them to maintain a basic level of service during strike time or face dismissal. Our correspondent in London, Rob Carter, joined us earlier to discuss the British government's stance on the demands of the unions.
The government, of course, is not backing down in terms of seemingly giving in to many or any of their demands, which is essentially they want higher pay, better pay standards, that kind of thing, to defeat inflation and so on. But basically, the government is now introducing this new measure, these new laws, which again is putting them in a very awkward position where they're essentially taking away rights of unions to strike and their workers to strike. And this, of course, is something which brings into question the nature of Britain's democracy right now. The government is saying, however, that they have to make a choice here because they can't afford to increase everyone's pay and they have to keep important services like the ambulance, nurses at work in order to stop unnecessary loss of life. But again, this is not being well received by members of the public and also by union bosses themselves, who have been completely condemning the government outright as basically acting in a kind of dictatorial fashion, or taking the country in a way that would resemble more of a dictatorship, which perhaps one day will ultimately ban unions and workers' ability to strike. That's the kind of thing that's being speculated now, and that's the direction, the slippery slope that Britain finds itself in. But the opposition Labour Party have decided that they will fight against this, even though Labour themselves have also been condemned for compromising on their traditional values of standing up for workers' rights. Here it seems that the government has gone too far and Labour has decided they'll take a stand.
John Ross, the senior fellow at Chongyang Institute, shares his views with us about the way the UK government is responding to protests and strikes by workers across the country.
I mean, it's one of a series of authoritarian government measures that they've taken. They introduced very draconian rights on the right of people to peacefully demonstrate, for example. And then you have the harassment of anybody, of very severe punishment, as with, for example, Assange, of anybody who brings out the truth. about what the Western governments are up, and it's because they're meeting increasing resistance for their population, and it shows what the character of Western so-called democracy was. As provided you were discussing something which didn't matter, you had so free speech. You know, if we want to discuss whether traffic lights should be red, yellow, and green, or we should change the color to purple or something, doubtless they'd allow free speech on it. But if you have something which actually affects the real situation, then it's clamped down upon. It shows the shallow, hollow sham which Western democracy actually is. And it is indeed increasing authoritarianism. It's one of the most severe cases, but it's very far from being the only case that's going on at the present time.
People have flocked to the streets in Yemen demanding an end to the Saudi-led coalition's blockade on their country. It was the second day of rallies against the blockade in place by Saudi Arabia and its allies for 8 years now. Demonstrators are strongly critical of the international community for its inaction to bring an end to the Saudi war and siege. The conflict has devastated Yemen, where the majority of the population relies on humanitarian aid, and the existing blockade makes it difficult for the Yemenis to have access to basic supplies. The Yemeni demonstrators have called for decisive military action against Saudi Arabia and the UAE to force them to end the siege.
A mass rally has been staged in the Yemeni capital along with several other Yemeni provinces called Al-Hisar Harb Alayna, which translates to "The siege is war upon us." Yemen is experiencing one of the worst humanitarian crises in history due to what protesters call the U.S. and Saudi Arabia strangling blockade on innocent civilians. Demonstrators called for an immediate end to the blockade and the ongoing war.
We came out in this blessed protest to tell the aggressors and their allies that their blockade is a war on us. Therefore, we, the Yemeni people, say if you do not lift your blockade, we will certainly teach you a lesson you will never forget. We will not sit back and watch our people starve to death.
We came out to deliver a message to the world that we will no longer remain silent on this aggression, war, and blockade on our people.
Yemen's military spokesperson reiterated this week that if the Saudi-led coalition fails to lift the blockade, the Yemeni army will have no choice but to use military force to break the siege. Protesters in Sana'a expressed that it's time to use the military card, since the Saudi-led coalition continues to seize Yemeni fuel ships in the Red Sea.
We came out today to tell our military forces to go ahead and strike the capital cities of our enemies so they can be forced to leave the blockade by the will of Allah. Only then they will live in disgrace and humility.
The protest comes after a week of violence stemming from the continuous Saudi shelling in the northern province of Sa'da, which has killed and injured dozens of civilians over the past 2 weeks. Furthermore, Saudi Arabia continues to seize and detain Yemeni fuel ships in the Red Sea, preventing them from reaching the port of Hodeidah and unloading the much-needed fuel supply. The Saudi-led coalition attacked Yemen in 2015, declaring they would defeat the Ansar Allah movement and their allies within a matter of weeks. It is now 2023, and they have not achieved any of their goals. This, as the Yemeni government based in Sana'a continues to advance its military deterrence capabilities. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
The U.S. has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran, this time targeting suppliers of drones that Washington claims Russia has been using in the war in Ukraine. The sanctions targeted six executives and board members of Quds Aviation Industries. The U.S. Treasury Department described the industries as a key Iranian defense manufacturer responsible for designing and producing drones. The sanctions also targeted the director of Iran's Aerospace Industries Organization. The measures freeze any U.S.-based assets of those targeted individuals and bans Americans from dealing with them. Iran has denied allegations that it has provided Russia with drones to be used in the war in Ukraine. Tehran says it did send drones to Russia, but that was before the start of the war in February. Moscow has also denied using Iranian drones in Ukraine. Iran has hosted a conference on slain Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. He was assassinated in a U.S. air raid in Iraq in 2020. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Qasem Soleimani. This is one of the dozens of commemoration ceremonies that have been held across Iran. Senior military and state officials attended this gathering in Tehran to pay their respect to General Soleimani.
Martyr Soleimani was the forerunner of all the martyrs who lost their lives in the fight against terrorism. That's why his name continues to be remembered by Iranians.
Not only did the American authorities commit this crime, but they openly took responsibility for it. We have been following up on our legal pursuit with the cooperation of Iraq's judiciary to bring the perpetrators to justice.
Soleimani was the commander of a branch of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps called the Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He was killed on January 3, 2020, in a drone strike outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-US President Donald Trump. Millions took part in his funeral, both in Iraq and Iran. Now, on his third assassination anniversary, Iranians still feel the loss.
It's been 3 years now that we lost our commander. We call him the Commander of Hearts because he fought Daesh overseas to keep the terrorists at bay and prevent them from entering our soil. We owe our security to General Soleimani.
General Soleimani is known for his role in eliminating Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. That's why his assassination is viewed as a huge loss for the region and a big win for the terrorists.
People here say General Soleimani's assassination gave a clear clue about who is who in the fight against terrorism in the region. They say the U.S. killed the nemesis of Daesh, and that corroborates Trump's claim that America created Daesh. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The race is just over. The U.S. House of Representatives finally elects a new speaker after 15 rounds of voting this week. Kevin McCarthy from California won the post after defeats over 4 days caused by Republican infighting. A group of 20 hardline Republicans were against McCarthy. They had cited a lack of trust on him over political issues with President Joe Biden and the Democratic-held Senate. McCarthy gave concessions to be able to get the post. He's succeeding Democrat Nancy Pelosi. Republicans took control of the U.S. House in November elections. The latest race to name a new speaker was the longest in 160 years. Biden has congratulated McCarthy and says that he is ready to work with the Republicans. The latest saga at the U.S. House was overshadowed by the third anniversary of the January 6th storming of the Capitol by the supporters of the former President Donald Trump.
The two-year anniversary of the election integrity protest, which burst into Congress on January 6th, has been overshadowed by Congress's historic failure to select the third most important post in the country, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. After more than a dozen votes, mainstream Republican Kevin McCarthy finally won a majority, ending the total paralysis of the new Congress. However, the embarrassing stalemate was the worst of its kind since before the American Civil War.
Both of them just show how American politics is dominated by spectacle and political theater, while Americans who are suffering through a terrible economic hardship right now and are politically polarized are just sitting on the sidelines while all this plays out.
As the speaker chaos continued, Democrats demanded attention for 2020, while Republican lawmakers largely ignored the anniversary. The stark difference isn't surprising. Polls have long shown that 35% of the country still calls the events of January 6th a legitimate protest, while 50% still calls it an insurrection. The subsequent January 6th committee to investigate the incident was either branded a political show trial and witch hunt or a necessary defense of American-style democracy.
It should have been a bipartisan inquiry, a serious one, into what was, you know, supposedly this, you know, vast constitutional violation by Trump and his campaign and his administration. And it's just become this endless commercial for the Democratic Party, which is totally bankrupt. And 2 years later, they're still using it to, you know, try and get themselves elected.
While Washington is repeatedly faulted for encouraging protests in other countries, almost 200 January 6th protesters have been sentenced to prison terms. Seemingly every participant has been publicly hunted down, which may serve as a chilling effect which forestalls future protests. Has Washington's response to the controversial events of January 6, 2020 reduced conflict, division, and disunity? We cannot ask Congress, because just like 2 years ago, they cannot meet in peace. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Peruvians have hit the streets again, demanding the resignation of President Dina Boluarte, who took over from her ousted predecessor, Pedro Castillo, in December. Protesters blocked roads, threw stones, and burned tires in several cities. In some places, police fired tear gas to disperse the crowd that was trying to barricade main routes. Peru has been in a turmoil ever since Castillo was removed from office and arrested for attempting to dissolve Congress to avoid an impeachment. He is now in pretrial detention over charges of rebellion and conspiracy. The former VP Boluarte assumed power shortly after Castillo's removal. She has already rescheduled general elections to minimize public anger. Almost 24 people have been killed in protests since last month. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
This month, the world is commemorating the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, and his comrades. General Soleimani and his companions were assassinated in a U.S. terrorist drone strike authorized by Donald Trump in Iraq 3 years ago. Mata Soleimani was revered across the world due to his relentless war on terror. Mandela Mandela, the grandson of South Africa's iconic anti-apartheid leader Nelson Mandela, says Mata Soleimani is highly respected in South Africa. Let's take a listen.
As South Africans and activists on the ground, we have always held General Soleimani to high regard. He has always inspired young people, particularly in Africa and the global community, to continue to be the voices of the oppressed.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of news and events making headlines in Africa. Today, we're focusing on the third anniversary of the assassination of Iran's top anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and how he is highly respected in Africa due to his war on Western-backed Takfiri terrorist groups. Our experts today will give us their incisive analysis on today's subjects. And you can be part of the conversation by sending us your comments through our social media handle.
Africa's affection for martyr Soleimani. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the second in command of Iraq's popular mobilization units, and their companions were assassinated in a U.S. drone strike authorized by Trump near Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. Both commanders were highly revered across the West Asia region and beyond because of their key role in fighting the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group, particularly in Iraq and Syria. Martyr Soleimani was also respected in Africa, a continent that has suffered immensely due to attacks by the Daesh-linked Takfiri terrorist groups.
The leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, says those who committed the heinous terrorist act of assassinating General Soleimani and his companions exposed themselves.
We are now commemorating the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, may Allah have mercy on him, an icon of fight against terrorism. No doubt the killers of General Qasem Soleimani have exposed themselves. Here you have somebody who spent all his life trying to ensure that all traces of terrorists have been flushed out in Iraq and Syria. He is a strategist who had undone all the strategies of the enemy, in particular in these two countries. Yet in the end of the day, he was killed. He was killed by those who showed themselves to be the actual terrorists. Here's somebody fighting terrorism.
Now, for more on Africa's affection for Martyr Qasem Soleimani, we are joined by Tshetso Magama, a former member of South African Parliament. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you for having me.
We also have with us here Buka Ngessa, an activist and commentator. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Ngessa, too.
You're welcome.
Now, let's start off with Mr. Magama. Many people in Africa reacted with anger and sadness following the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani by U.S. forces. What's your take on this reaction?
No, of course, it's something that happened that is not quite dissimilar from our own experiences. I mean, we have a rich history of our leaders having been assassinated, you know, since the dawn of independence starting in the 1950s. I mean, you go through an entire list of people that indeed would have made Africa a completely better place today. And so when we saw what happened to General Soleimani, you know, it evoked those feelings, of really hatred for a system of international relations, and U.S. hegemony that has defined the African continent, and much of the global South.
Well, as Mr. Magama stated, the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani evoked memories of the assassination of African freedom fighters by colonial powers. Now, let's bring in Mr. Ngessa. How do people in Africa view Martyr Soleimani?
The killings or the terrorist attacks on African liberation movements in Africa, you know, it has affected the African people quite a lot. And when General Soleimani was murdered under, you know, the direction of Trump, it reminded us of the murder of Samora Machel. It reminded us of the murder of Ruth First. And even in the Kenya today, it opened wounds, you know, of the murder of our freedom fighter, Dedan Kimathi. And the African people share a lot of empathy and sympathy with the Iranian people, and we have continued to admire, the Major General Soleimani in his attempts.
At the end of 2016, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the then ringleader of the notorious Daesh terrorist group, announced that the group had expanded and shifted some of its command, media, and wealth to Africa. Daesh, or ISIS, established affiliates in Africa, especially in North and West Africa. Therefore, General Soleimani's war on Daesh was also meant to bring peace and stability in Africa. There is no doubt that Martyr Soleimani's war against Daesh terrorists in Syria and Iraq contributed to the weakening of the group's affiliates in Africa.
After the breaking of the cells in Iraq and even Syria, under the able leadership of General Soleimani, we know for a fact that the terrorist cells in Africa were also quantitatively and qualitatively weakened, because they lacked any advice or even material support that were offered from those organizations or those terrorist cells that existed outside the continent. In fact, it disapproved even the United States unilateral policy that has been always, you know, interfering with our legal system in the name of fighting terrorism and has eventually failed. But we have seen the effort under the Quds Force that we admire a lot in the African continent and, you know, the heroic people of Iran for having taken off, you know, to sacrifice it all in a way to liquidate all the terrorist cells.
General Soleimani's martyrdom galvanized not only the Iranian nation, but also the forces of resistance to Zionism and imperialism throughout the world, and especially in Africa, a continent that continues to suffer from neocolonialism. Mandela Mandela, the grandson of South Africa's iconic anti-apartheid leader, Nelson Mandela, says martyr Soleimani continues to inspire the people of Africa.
He always championed the causes of the oppressed people, whether be in Iraq, whether be in Palestine. He was always a voice of the oppressed. And we will forever remember him for the principles and the ideals that he stood for.
Now, despite massive Western propaganda, General Qasem Soleimani is loved and is a source of inspiration for many people in Africa. What's the reason for this?
Mainly this can be attributed to the alternative global news channels that have also been able to penetrate the continent, the likes of Press TV, the likes of Telesur, that continue to even give an alternative analysis about global geopolitics. Otherwise, in the last few years, the United States and their propaganda machinery has dominated the airspace in Africa, and now the African people can now say that the United States is not trusted, because remember when we were fighting for our freedom, when we are fighting against the British colonial, forces in our country. Our own field marshal, Dedan Kimathi, was called a terrorist. And even the leader of the independence of the South Africa, Nelson Mandela, was, entered in the terrorist list.
Well, following the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa conveyed his condolences to Iran's president. Ramaphosa also expressed deep concern at the military action by the U.S., which led to increased tensions and created conditions for retaliation.
South Africa's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Naledi Pandor, described the assassination of General Soleimani as a regrettable event.
As I have said previously with respect to the assassination that occurred with the general in Iran, we believe this is an absolutely regrettable event. And as we've stated, we have urged restraint because we believe that there should be dialogue.
The South African government clearly rejected the move by the United States to assassinate General Soleimani. Analysts say it was important for South Africa, considered Africa's powerhouse, to voice its opposition to this act of provocation against Iran.
No, first and foremost, the South African people, and indeed the governing party in South Africa, the African National Congress, is a long-standing ally of the Islamic Republic, especially the Revolutionary Islamic Republic. And so it was important that the people of Iran felt that, they had friends, despite the West's attempts to isolate Iran and hold it out there as a pariah. I think that's firstly. But secondly, it was also an attempt, by South Africa really to re-emphasize the centrality of the rule of law in international relations. It was, of course, also a condemnation of this kind of dastardly and cowardly acts, by the U.S. I mean, the question of the killing, in fact, the assassination, the brutal murder of a very senior state official of another country, I mean, is really the pinnacle of banditry.
South Africa's ruling party, African National Congress, or ANC, also condemned airstrikes by the United States that killed General Qasem Soleimani. The then ANC Secretary General, Ace Magashule, issued a statement saying ANC rejects this raw aggression against the people and government of Iran. He also stated that the African National Congress and all progressive formations of the world cannot afford to remain silent while the actions of the U.S. appear to be undermining peace and security with impunity.
Mr. Magama, what's your take on this statement by the ANC after the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani?
No, it is quite apt. It's precise. You know, it clarified, you know, for many, you know, what this kind of action by a state really represents in an international order that should be led and guided by the United Nations, the United Nations Charter, and so on. I mean, there is no question that the dastardly murder of General Soleimani was an affront, you know, to the entire body of international law, and any such state that acts in such a behavior is really engaged in banditry. It's operating outside the bounds of international law and common decency.
Very well put there by Mr. Magama. The assassination of General Soleimani was indeed an act of brutality by the United States. We now take a short break. Stay with us.
Africa's affection for martyr Soleimani.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back. This week's topic is on Africa's affection for martyr General Qasem Soleimani.
Terrorism continues to pose a major threat to African countries. Western countries such as the United States, France, and Germany have deployed troops in Africa to ostensibly combat terrorists. However, despite the presence of these Western forces, Africa has witnessed an upsurge in terrorist attacks. Many in Africa believe Western troops are pursuing other nefarious objectives not related to the war on terror.
West African leaders met in November for talks on preventing terrorism in Sahel from spilling over into countries on the Gulf of Guinea. Now, speaking during the summit in Accra, Ghana's president warned of spreading terror threat in West Africa.
We continue to watch in angst how the activities of terrorists and extremist groups have resulted in the unfortunate disregard for the national sovereignty and territorial integrity of our states, the painful deterioration of the strength of our democracies, the wanton displacement of masses of our populations, and the needless loss of considerable numbers of lives.
Now, General Qasem Soleimani was steadfast in his war against terrorist groups and was successful in eliminating terrorists, especially in Iraq and Syria. Now, how can African countries use the experience of General Soleimani in battling terrorist groups currently spreading mayhem in several countries across the continent?
Thing that we can do is to take a record of his experiences and continue to open, you know, cooperation and even solidarity with the people of Iran and the Iranian government to collaborate in matters to do with security and anti-terrorist. Because in the last few years, when the fight of, you know, the fight against terrorism has always offered only partnerships from the United States, and even our security forces here at home, you know, consider, you know, Israel as a partner against terrorism. Well, all we know that the biggest sponsors of terrorism and violence against the ordinary citizens of the world has been the Zionist regime in Israel and also the United States.
Major Qasem Soleimani not only rescued Muslims from the Daesh terrorist group, but he also saved many Christians in Iraq and Syria from attacks and massacre by these notorious Takfiri terrorists. The Archbishop of the Armenian Diocese of Tehran says General Soleimani did the best he could to protect Christian communities in Iraq and Syria.
Well, as far as he was alive, he was protecting and trying to keep the Christian communities safe. But once he is now has been martyred, we mourn his death and his martyrdom.
For many years, the United States considered South Africa's liberation hero, Nelson Mandela, a terrorist. In fact, Mandela remained on U.S. terrorist watch lists until 2008. On the other hand, U.S. President Donald Trump also described General Soleimani as a terrorist, and indeed that was the pretext he used to assassinate this hero of the war on terror. These designations were clearly inaccurate, and now both Nelson Mandela and Qasem Soleimani are known globally as heroes who fought for freedom. The United States always gets it wrong in distinguishing between freedom fighters and terrorists. What's the reason for this?
It's clear that one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. We as Africans in general and South Africans in particular will never forget that indeed President Mandela was called a terrorist. And of course, there are reports that the CIA was active in tracking him down in the 1960s to get him to have him arrested. We are also aware, you know, that, you know, throughout the world to this day, those that the U.S., you know, differs with, they are normally called terrorists. Now, again, from our own experience, we have seen, especially in our cases, Africans, since the 1950s, and indeed even before that, that this has been a tactic that has been used by the U.S. and the West to demonize, you know, its enemies.
Across Africa, public figures and organizations continue to commemorate Iran's anti-terror commander, General Qasem Soleimani. The leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, says General Soleimani and his companions were fighters for peace, and they will always be remembered in Africa.
Mr. Angessa, you have the last word. Now, what needs to be done to keep the memory of Martyr Soleimani alive in Africa?
The legacy of General Soleimani is already with us here in Africa. In fact, in the last Martyrs Day, which is normally the 7th July in Kenya, we saw several demonstrators carrying portraits of General Soleimani in remembrance of the Martyrs Day here in Kenya. We have seen several civic spaces and even in the Shaku dwellers having huge murals you know, to portray General Soleimani as a true hero of the oppressed people. To keep his legacy, we continue, you know, not just to remember him by word, but also to take active roles in our, you know, fight against, you know, imperialism. And I think General Soleimani has fortified our faith that even though we look weak, we can be united against, you know, the hegemony of the United States and their Western allies.
Well, there you have it. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is inspiring the people of Africa to rise up and confront U.S.-led imperialist powers and their allies. I'd like to thank our guests today, Buka Ngessa and Tseto Magama, for their insight. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. It's been great having you. Goodbye for now.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
جعلتهم شهودا علي مع جوارحي وكنت أنت الرقيب علي من ورائهم والشاهد لما خفي عنهم.
Dear listeners, brothers and sisters, we have reached this part of the Divine Kumail supplication. Imam Ali alayhi salam says in this part, وَكُنْتَ أَنْتَ الرَّقِيبَ عَلَيَّ مِنْ وَرَائِهِمْ وَالشَّاهِدَ لِمَا خَفِيَ عَنْهُمْ And you are yourself the watcher over me from behind them and the witness of what is hidden from them. وَبِرَحْمَتِكَ أَخْفَيْتَ But you, through your mercy, you concealed it. وَبِفَضْلِكَ سَتَرْتَ Through your bounty, you veiled it. And I ask you even more, وَأَن تُوَفِّرَ حَذِّي مِن كُلِّ خَيْرٍ أَنْزَلْتَ I ask you that you bestow me an abundant share of every good you sent down. أو إحسان فضلت, every kindness you confer. أو بر تنشر, every goodness you unfold. أو رزق تبسط, every provision you spread out. أو ذنب تغفر, every sin you forgive. أو خطأ تستر, every error you cover. I ask you that you cover me in all these blessings, in all these kindnesses, in all these forgivenesses and coverings. The system, the steps that Imam Ali alayhi salam took to reach this level of asking in the Divine Kumail supplication, the language of which was just the language of forgiveness of the different kind of sins we may commit in our daily lives. To this part, من كل خير أنزلت, I ask you to give me your bounty, to give me an abundant share of every good deed. This system, this system of different specific steps is really wonderful. At first, he confesses to the sins. He confesses to the existence of the Almighty Allah and the fact that He is the absolute cause, because He is the one who can forgive every of our wicked acts. And now, by considering the fact that He is the one who has ordered us to ask Him for forgiveness, to call out to Him, to supplicate to Him, He reaches this part. And توفر حظي من كل خير أنزلت. This is not a small thing to ask from the Almighty Allah. And this kind of request can only be achieved by having a high level of understanding, of cognizance, of ma'rifah from the Almighty Allah.
You have imposed it to bestow upon me this night and this very hour the forgiveness for all the transgressions that I have been guilty of. For all the sins that I have committed, for all the ugly acts that I have kept secret, and for all the evils done by me, secretly or openly, in concealment or outwardly, and for every evil action that you have ordered the two noble scribes to confirm, who you have appointed to record all my actions and to be witnesses over me, along with the limbs of my body, whilst you watch over me besides them, and was witness to those acts concealed from them, which you in your mercy have kept secret, and through your kindness unexposed.
Thank you, Allah.
Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Now, what I have contended is the fact that Imam Ali alayhi salam has the highest level of understanding of ma'rifah of the Almighty Allah to ask him such a request, and توفر حظي من كل خير أنزلته, to give me the best abundant share of every good deed you sent down. And in this regard, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, إِذَا تَابَ الْعَبْدُ تَوْبَةً نَصُوحًا أَحَبَّهُ اللَّهُ وَسَتَرَ عَلَيْهِ. If a servant repents sincerely, Allah would love him and cover his faults. ينسي ملكيه ما كان يكتبان عليه. Imam Ali alayhi salam knows this. All of the infallibles know and are aware of this. Almighty Allah makes those two writer angels forget about the sins of that man who has truly repented. وَيُوحِي إِلَى جَوَارِحِهِ وَإِلَى بِقَاعِ الْأَرْضِ أَنِكْتُمِي عَلَيْهِ ذُنُوبَهِ. He will reveal to his body organs to do so, to forget all about his sins they have recorded. فَيَلْقَى اللَّهَ أَزَّ وَجَلْ حِينَ يَلْقَاهُ وَلَيْسَ شَيْءٌ يَشْهَدُ عَلَيْهِ بِشَيْءٍ مِّنَ الذُّنُوبِ. This is really interesting. So the servant would meet Allah while there is no record of his sins. Although there were so many witnesses, where are those two recording angels? Where are those two angels that are ordered to write down every action of ours? Where are those limbs and body parts? Where are the imams, the infallible imams and the prophets and all those witnesses? The Almighty Allah has asked them to forget all about the sins of the one who truly repents, who repents sincerely. إِذَا تَابَ الْعَبْدُ تَوْبَةً نَصُوحًا. This specification of tawbah and repentance is the kind of thing that we must learn more throughout our different traditions. The traditions are replete with what the conditions of tawbatan nasuhan are. But the result of this sincere repent is amazing. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. We also learn from Imam Ali alayhi salam to ask him to give us an abundant share of every good deed he sends down. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.